Hi, this is James Devine, and I am an educator who has come out of the trenches. Listen in as my friend and colleague Dana Goodyear shares stories and tips from other educators who have come out of the trenches.
Welcome to the Out of the Trenches podcast. This is Dana Goodyear. Thanks for listening. My next guest is Katie Powell. Katie is a director for middle level programs for the Association for Middle Level Education. She began teaching in 2005 and has served as a special education teacher, Title I teacher, instructional coach, and classroom teacher. Katie's first book, Board and Busters, grew out of this focus on providing interventions for struggling students by leveraging curiosity and fun to increase engagement while driving learning deeper. Katie's newest book, Frustration Busters, is scheduled to release in early November. Katie believes in respecting the expertise of teachers and shares her creative process so they can address instruction and classroom management within their own teaching styles. Welcome to the podcast, Katie.
Thanks so much for having me.
Well, tell me about a time when you were in the trenches and managed to crawl out.
Well, for me, it's kind of an unusual one. I have a post in the blog of my website talking about the reality of being a homeless author. Mm-hmm. When Boredom Busters released in 2019, my family of four was living with our friend's family of five, and our two cats moved in with their two cats and St. Bernard, and we were doing life together because my husband had hit some hard times. He has bipolar depression, and along with the challenges of mental health, he had been self-medicating with alcohol and went through job loss. And he was in the ministry. Our home was a parsonage. So when he lost his job, we lost our home and had to scramble and get our feet back under us. So, you know, when you first start doing things in the world of professional presentations and you know, writing in the world of education, I imagine probably also beyond, some people think you're in it to become some sort of like edu celebrity. And, I was homeless. So I think I was probably among the most humble edu celebrities in existence. It was a strange and surreal experience to unbox my book for the very first time and record that video for my publisher from my friend's couch, because my couch was in storage in their garage. Wow. Because I didn't have my own home at that point. Mm-hmm. So boy, if I ever worried about getting a big head, my life just kept me like, totally self-checked.
Yeah. And that's definitely a trench, right? Because, you know, you had that good moment of your book coming out, but also just finding yourself and, you know, getting yourself back on your feet. And you said that you recently bought a house by yourself. So you're just learning to kind of navigate that, you know, life now kind of after all that happened. And It's great to know that, you know, it's, you know, sometimes you go through these hard times and, you know, it's just kind of looking at that in perspective and, you know, seeing how you grew from that.
Right. Well, now I can sincerely say that I'm thankful to have gone mm-hmm. through that. Yeah. And in the midst of it, I would not have told you I was thankful for it. But afterwards, seeing when I go through what I would have defined as one of the hardest things that was possible for me to face, I mean, really barring some sort of medical catastrophe, mm-hmm. everything that could go wrong for my family was. but seeing how every need we had was met, and not mm-hmm. in the way I expected, you know, I expected to magically have a home in that time and for all the pieces to fall into place the way I would have wanted them to. That's not the way it worked, mm-hmm. but all of the pieces fell into place precisely the way they needed to. And even the blessing of doing life alongside best friends for those few months we lived together, when I'd get home from a long day, I had a best friend to cook dinner with. And when one of the kids was struggling with homework, we had four parents on site mm-hmm. and older siblings to provide help. And to walk through hardship with other people was a tremendous blessing that I would not have picked for myself, but wound up being precisely the right thing for me. So I learned a lot about doing life in community with mm-hmm. others. And boy, in the world of education too, isn't that incredibly important, especially now?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I would agree. And, you know, it's great that you had those people to support you and the extra set of adults that could help you with your kids and vice versa. And, you know, looking back, right, that you're glad you went through that. It's yeah. powerful. Yeah. So let's talk a little bit about your work with AMLE. I started, you know, attending webinars and attended last year's national conference for AMLE. So how did you get involved working with AMLE?
Well, I first became acquainted with AMLE when I was a brand new teacher. The school mm-hmm. I started teaching for was a member. At that time, AMLE was known as the NMSA, the National Middle School Association. Mm-hmm. And so I would get the magazine in my mailbox, fell in love with the articles. I became that person that would highlight articles and then put them in other people's mailboxes. So I just geeked out over the information and the resources I was receiving. And, you know, life took us different places. We moved and I was working for a different school and the school was no longer a member of AMLE, but I personally maintained my membership. And mm-hmm. there was a call for presentations for the annual conference that came out over email. And I opened it and kept it open, like in the back of my, you know, computer for like a whole week. And at the end of the day, I would go close down all my programs and see that and be like, oh yeah, there's that. And I felt drawn to the idea of presenting at the annual conference, but I was like, what do I have to share? And mm-hmm, pardon mm-hmm. me for saying this, but I was just a classroom teacher. Mm-hmm. Oh man. And now in the position I'm in, I hear that from people all the time. Y'all, there is no such thing as just an anything in the world of mm-hmm. education. And I finally decided that, well, the worst they could tell me was no. So I might as well submit a proposal. And I did. It was the baby version of what eventually became the Boredom Busters. And I did a 15-minute speed learning session in Columbus, Ohio that year. That was 2015.
Wow.
The session went beautifully. We're supposed to have like four or five people around our table. I think I had like 30.
Wow. And,
you know, my whole drive to that conference, I remember thinking, this isn't about me. I don't mm-hmm. care at all if my name winds up recognizable out of this. That's not important to me. Even as a teacher, that's never been my goal. If students forget my name, all I want them to remember is that they felt powerful and comfortable in their own skin and successful, you know, the year I had them, and that did something to establish them for success in whatever version of life they're going to carve out for themselves someday. And taking the same approach to that initial session, I just wanted to be able to encourage some educators. Mm-hmm. I wanted to be able to be a spark, to provide that spark. And well, it worked. Watching the folks gathered around get excited about the ideas, I realized I was onto something. And from there, just grew. Started the website and posted the resources there. And my dad's a writer. He's a journalist. So I grew up around language and was like, well, maybe I'll put this together in a book. And from mm-hmm. there, we have Boredom Busters. But my work with AMLE then branched into when the association was looking for someone to take over running the programs that work directly with schools and directly with educators. Mm-hmm. Someone in a mutual contact in my world and the AMLE world suggested I apply. And I did the same thing I did with that presentation where mm-hmm. I was like, they don't really want a teacher. You know, they want someone with the fancy titles and all this experience. I don't have that. So I closed the email. I did the same thing. Mm. And then a few days later, that person's like, no, really, Katie, you should apply. And so I even emailed Stephanie, the CEO. I was like, are you really looking for a teacher? And she's like, yes, Katie, we're really looking for a teacher. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So same kind of thing. Hey, worst they can tell me is no, I'm happy as a lark in my job. I love classroom teaching, wasn't planning to leave it. So whatever, we'll just apply. And lo and behold, was offered the job. So I've been serving as the director for middle level programs officially since June 1st.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So interesting kind of turn of events, how that happened. Just kind of, you know, I know we all have that, you know, not good enough complex, right? Mm-hmm. That, oh, we're just at X, Y, and Z. And I've done the same thing, like, you know, thinking, well, maybe I won't get this proposal accepted, but having that, like, just on the back end, right? And okay, mm-hmm. I'll submit it, right? But yeah, it's taking that step. It's taking that risk and then seeing how it pans out for you. You know, you got the position and you've been working with AMLE in this new position. And I wanted to talk more about the book, Boredom Buster. So that was published in 2018. So you said this came out of a presentation, but then you built a website around it. Mm-hmm. So what are some of the things that educators can use in their classroom, if you want to just give a small snapshot of kind of how they can use that? And is it for all educators K-12, or would it be more appropriate for like elementary school educators?
Well, I will say it was really important to me that the strategies I was putting out there would work for anyone in mm-hmm. any teaching style in any classroom setting, because I lived the mistake of thinking that the way I teach is the right way. Mm-hmm. Early in my career, it was easy to think, well, gosh, if things are working for me, everyone should teach this way. That is as mm-hmm. wrong as possible. If I, in my own teaching style, were to try to emulate someone else, I would feel uncomfortable the whole mm-hmm. time, and I would probably fail miserably. The reality is we need to teach the way we teach to the best of our ability. So mm-hmm. all of the Boredom Buster activities are designed to be highly variable and scalable, where they can be adapted in any classroom setting. There are folks using them literally pre-K through collegiate education. They all start with no materials, and then there are some that use, okay, maybe a few materials, but mm-hmm. I require that everything be extremely affordable to purchase and then useful for a number of different activity frameworks so that you're not going out to buy or prepare something that you can use only once. You know, the reality is sometimes we have the perfect activity to teach something, and it's hands-on and engaging and exciting, and it's perfect for that lesson. Mm-hmm. But what about the next day and the next day and the next day and the next day? And what about the hard days where you were up late with a kid with a bellyache overnight and you didn't have time to do what you thought you were going to do, or mm-hmm. where you were coaching practice after school, or where you just decided to put on your fuzzy socks and watch Netflix and be a human being for a while? So when we can't always dedicate that extra time and energy and money to doing the things we would dream of doing in our classroom, can we still engage our students in really exciting and really valuable learning activities? And the answer is yes. Mm-hmm. Obviously, Boredom Busters are not the only way to do that, but they are a way and a series of strategies and activities that can be used regardless of, you know, level of student, classroom format, whatever. So the easiest ones start with nothing more than a worksheet. I decided that's kind of a universal safe place to start. Teachers mm-hmm. who are already doing active learning in their classrooms are already comfortable trying new things. Mm-hmm. The folks who are uncomfortable are leaning heavily on very traditional teaching strategies, worksheets, okay. textbooks, lectures, homework. So the book is structured around those very comfortable, very safe, universal teaching practices, worksheets, lectures, and grading. So starting with just a worksheet, for example, instead of handing it out to each student and having them do the whole thing by themselves, mm-hmm. you can hand it out to each student, have everybody do number one, and then have the students fold it into a paper airplane and at your signal launch it around the room. And then they grab someone else's and do number two, and you repeat and repeat and repeat mm-hmm. until the whole assignment's done. And when they get their original paper back, they now see not only the thinking they contributed to everyone else's work, but the thoughts of many of their classmates, and then can take the time to evaluate those answers and decide, were my classmates right? Were they not? Why do I think mm-hmm. so? And provide that justification. So we've taken a basic worksheet, which typically they're like a depth of knowledge, maybe one or two. Mm-hmm. And we've taken it deeper by calling our students to justify, to defend, to argue, to refute, to provide evidence in support of or against. And then we've also got them up. We've gotten them out of their seats. We did something weird and novel that feels a tiny bit taboo.
This podcast is a proud member of the Teach Better Podcast Network. Better today, better tomorrow, and the podcast to get you there. Explore more podcasts at www.teachbetterpodcastnetwork.com. Now let's get back to the episode.
Mm-hmm. So it doesn't look and feel like an ordinary school day. And then we've also gotten them collaborating a little bit, in the sense that if they were unsure of something themselves, they've gotten to check their thinking against the thinking of others without waiting on us to be the one to provide that feedback, probably 2 or 3 days later when they finally get a graded assignment back. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And it took nothing more than the worksheet we were going to use that day anyway. So we didn't have to prep anything. There was, you know, no laminating required, no, you know, fancy purchase off the internet. It was just a worksheet we were going to use anyway.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And all the resources on your website are free?
Yes. Okay. Yeah, everything's free. The new book, Frustration Busters, that content isn't on the website yet. Some of it will go up there, but the nature of that book is different enough than the strategies and Boredom Busters that it isn't going to live in a website space the same way that the Boredom Buster activities have. So although some of the resources will be online, others will be in the book just because it is a totally different project.
Okay. Okay. And so what is the kind of difference between the website for Boredom Busters versus the book? I mean, do people have to read the book to know how to use the resources on the website?
No. In fact, that was important to me. So my royalty checks would probably be a little higher if I don't know, locked down the website behind a paywall or took some things down. But when I first started teaching, if I needed something, I'd go to the veteran teachers down the hall and they would open those file cabinets. And, you know, it's like, and I can't remember if it was Bruce Almighty or Evan Almighty, but, you know, the God character opens the file cabinet and it like extends all the way across the room. Those are the file cabinets those veteran teachers have, and they open them and the drawer just goes forever. And they reach in the back and they fill your arms up with these file folders full of Black Line Masters and like, oh, you're going to need this. And oh, how about this? And ooh, here's, I used to use this. And I would walk back to my classroom, like couldn't even see over the stack to go back with the things they had given me. No one asked me to pay for anything there. It was just this concept of this is what we do in education. And that was important to me when I started putting these resources together. I want it to do good out there. And there are plenty of educators who love their job and are very, very good at it, who are very tired and running on empty. And if what I can do provides a little spark or a little resource to make their Thursday lesson plan shine so that they can reach their students can love learning and they can love teaching, then I want to do it, even if it doesn't make me any money in the end. So no, the website is totally accessible without the book. The book does include more of the background and justification for why engagement like this matters. I go into the research a little bit. I include anecdotes. The book also includes a little bit more about what to do when a new idea fails, because that's inevitable when we're trying new things. Guides readers through the process of how to create their own activities and go through basically like my design process so that instead of just leaning on my ideas, they really can be inspired to do their own, and then fleshes out the activities in greater detail.
Okay. Okay. So that's a good kind of a starter for those who would like to visit the website or purchase the book, to kind of how they could use each of those. And then you have Frustration Busters coming out that you talked about. So tell me how that book came about. You said you and your colleagues had days when you're frustrated at the beginning of the pandemic, and that's kind of how the book was born.
I will never forget that week, and anyone who lived it's going to remember too. So March 2020, it was, Monday or Tuesday of that week. It was full moon. It was standardized test season for us, not the state test, but we were doing like our MAP testing. Our schedule was altered to accommodate the testing. We had a special speaker one afternoon. It was like just one of those weeks where everything was like half a step off. And we dropped our students off for the special assembly. And we stood there outside the cafeteria. And instead of going back to our classrooms and tackling the mounds of work we all had, we stood there kind of looking at our shoes and whining at each other. And someone said, man, I just really feel like a failure today. And someone else goes, oh, thank God. And we all kind of turned to look at her like, what? And she's like, I thought I was the only one. And we got to talking and realized all of us, we were all veteran teachers. I mean, many years into our careers, we were all effective or highly effective on our professional evaluations. And we were absolutely broken. And when we tried to figure out why, it was students leaving assignments in their lockers and coming to class with dead Chromebooks when we need them for standardized testing. And, you know, the grumbling that happens when you eat lunch 45 minutes later than you normally do. It was these tiny little things. We're veteran successful teachers, and we were broken over like assignments left in lockers. And I had this moment of realizing, oh, this matters. If anyone's been keeping their ear to the ground of the loss of professionals in the world of education, that we are losing dedicated, experienced teachers, even pre-pandemic, but especially post and while we're navigating all of the challenges of this world, we're losing early teachers in their first 3 years of teaching at an alarming rate, and not enough candidates are entering teacher education programs. So we are literally, truly having trouble sustaining our profession. And anyone who is covering multiple duties in a classroom knows we can't even get sub coverage. We're running out of bus drivers. This is a true issue in the world of education. So we have to take teacher stress and job satisfaction seriously. This isn't just whining about our paychecks. This is so much more. No one enters the teaching profession for anything less than a passion for it. It is too hard a job with too little benefits to go into this if you don't love it. But the day-to-day drip, drip, drip of the stress and frustration and discouragement and powerlessness we feel robs us of that joy. And if you have encountered a teacher who no longer loves their job and the impact that has on the students, the actual human beings they serve every day, you know how important this is. We serve real human beings every day. So we have to take good care of ourselves, and we have to be, you know, good in our own psyche and in our own hearts as we approach those kids, because who we are to them is impacting them in a lasting and significant way. So Frustration Busters was born out of that, tackling not the big, you know, a student tried to stab me with a pair of scissors moments, but instead those small moments that leave us feeling like failures at the end of the day, that leave us drained and exhausted and discouraged, and doing so in a way that isn't where I tell you how you should handle missing pencils. There's not one right way to handle missing pencils, but instead to really break down why we feel the way we do when these things frustrate us, and then what are the responses we could have? You know, if preserving learning is our highest priority in that moment, how can we handle it in the moment to keep the learning the central focus? And then later, how can we unpack it and backtrack so this thing isn't going to interrupt us and frustrate us again? And that's what the book's all about. It sees teachers for all those teachers who are closing up their classroom at the end of the day and wondering if they're going to come back on Monday. This book sees you and what you're dealing with.
By the time this episode releases, that will be out. And, yes. You know, I encourage people to check that book out, because, you know, like you said, we all know what's going on now with the lack of people entering the profession. Yeah. People taking more time off because they're so burned out so early in their year. Mm-hmm. And yeah, just to kind of, you know, you're not alone in your frustration. Like you're talking about these veteran teachers, you know, I've been there, you know, kids that don't have the charged Chromebooks, leaving things in the locker, those type of things. So I'm looking forward to that coming out. I wanted to ask about any professional development speaking that you have on the docket in November, December. I know that the AMLE conference is coming up. It is virtual again this year.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's my next upcoming one that's publicly available. Mm-hmm. So one benefit of it being virtual is it's highly accessible. So that's AMLE's annual conference. It's November 5th, 6th, and 7th online. Mm-hmm. If you're a college student listening in, college student registration is free. There's mm-hmm. a way to do that through your local college level affiliate. And if you're not connected with one of those, hey, get in touch with me. We'll make that happen. For schools, school-wide registration is reduced this year, and that's been highly popular. That you can pay a smaller registration fee than mm-hmm. registering each individual teacher, and every teacher in your building can attend. And if you can't attend live, all the sessions are recorded and will be available through mid-December.
Okay.
And that's my next, like, publicly available. I'm scheduled to go to Europe in January. I am assuming we'll still be able to go, but you know, international travel always makes me nervous. Places close down to Americans. So if you're an international listener, that's coming up on the docket. But other than that, right now, you know, most of the professional development I'm doing is specific to my work with AMLE. I oversee our successful middle school program. So if you're a middle school educator listening in and you're interested in middle grades best practices and how to align your school to that, not anyone's opinion, but instead decades of research into young adolescent development and middle grades best practices, I'm happy to get you in touch with resources there, because that's a big piece of what I do now.
Well, that is something I will put in the show notes, how to contact you. And as we wrap it up today, I wanted to ask, out of everything we talked about, what's one thing in particular you'd like listeners to remember?
I think one of the things that I would like everyone to remember is how important community is. You know, I said that in my personal story, going through what I did when, you know, what I thought I was experiencing was my family losing everything. And instead, I came out of that understanding how rich I was. And I was rich in people, in connection and community. And especially even the final edits of my book were due this week. So I reread Frustration Busters beginning to end, every letter, every punctuation mark. And the concept of people and being in this together really resonated with me on this read through, that we have the potential with the way we relate to each other to pull each other down or to build each other up. And I believe we are stronger together. And that when I'm having a bad day and I'm weak, I can lean on the shoulders of someone else who can help me be strong. And when they're having a bad day and they're weak, they can lean on me and I can help them be strong. And if we're all a little bit weak together, we're stronger leaning in together than we are standing apart. I believe we've got to take the community of educators seriously. This is not a place for competition, for possessiveness, where if I've got something that works in my classroom, I'm not going to tell you because I want my scores to be better than yours. No, we've got to abolish that out of the world of education. Again, these are actual human beings we're serving every day. So this isn't about being proprietary or, you know, competitive about what's working for us. We need to share. We need to take care of each other. We need to open those candy drawers, share the Twix and the lemon heads, and take good care of each other, because we are not going to get through this alone.
That's so important to remember. Take care of others in your community, not only, you know, the home community, you know, the city you're in, but also at work. So important. Where can people follow you online and connect with you?
My website is teachbeyondthedesk.com. So, you know, all the activities are up there, and there is a way to contact me through the site. On Twitter, I'm at beyond_the_desk. And then I'm also on Instagram at teach_beyond_the_desk. But I don't understand Instagram. I think I'm, I don't know, maybe a little too old for it. It exists. I don't get it. So if someone reaches out to me through Instagram, I see that they made contact with me. I'm not entirely sure always how to get my stuff up there. So if you look at it, it looks like I haven't posted in a million years. It's because I always forget how every single time. But Twitter, I'm much more active on. So that's probably a better place to find me in the online world. A friend yesterday was like, "Hey, are you on Snapchat?" And I was like, "I'm 20 years behind already. I don't understand Instagram. I can't add Snapchat, let alone like TikTok. Oh, for Pete's sake." So yeah, Twitter's probably the best place to find me.
Okay. Well, thank you so much for being on the Out of the Trenches podcast today. It was a pleasure talking with you.
Thank you so much for having me. And thank you for the work you're doing. I said prior to us recording that I'm a big fan now of the podcast and just the human stories you're sharing in the world of education. And it's a breath of fresh air and doing a lot of good. So thank you very much.
Well, that's great to hear. I'm glad. Thank you.
Check out the show notes on danagoodyear.com to learn more about this guest and links to their social media. Please subscribe, share, rate, and review wherever you download this podcast. Tell your friends and colleagues about it. And if this episode resonates, especially with you, be sure to share it out on social media and tag me at Out of Trenches PC.